Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the town of North Hempstead. One of the many services we offer is help at home with minor home maintenance. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and you. I'm your host, John Ryan, and my co-host today is Otto Loos. And we're really having a very nice, just down-to-earth conversation with North Hempstead Town Clerk Wayne Wink. And that's what we try to do on the show. We're not looking to catch anybody. We want to have fun. We want to talk about life experiences. Wayne did a wonderful program for Valentine's Day, which involved into his sharing with Otto and with his own wife, Stacy, about things they're doing. Otto did have a question, so I do want to get a little bit more technical in nature into what happens in Wayne's office. Otto, you had a question in reference to a fishing license. And as the spring comes in, people are going to be looking at those things.
Yeah, well, actually, the question was, how do you know when you need a license? Like, for example, I remember going to the town dock in Port Washington with the three boys and fishing. And I thought nothing about a license. I went fishing, with three boys. Did I need a license?
You probably did. New York state law, especially in saltwater, New York state law does require a license. I believe the saltwater licenses are free. But like I tell everybody, when it comes to the details of these types of licenses, if you go to the town website, you go to the town clerk's page, we have all the requirements of what it is you need to be eligible for a license and how to go about getting one. You can always call 311 and they can assist you as well. You come into my office, we issue the licenses, it's all good. And that's one of the functions I mentioned before, that fishing and hunting licenses are actually issued by us on behalf of the DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation. And so therefore, you know, that's something that we answer to the state with, you know, and providing those types of licenses. So, you know, I highly recommend call 311 or go to the town website and we'll have all the details of how to go about getting your license.
Now, the hunting license, like, I don't visualize a whole lot of hunting going on in North Hempstead.
No. I hope there's very little. I mean, I know there's some duck hunting that goes on in blinds, you know, in Hempstead Harbor and Manhasset Bay. But usually, people who live down here who have either property upstate or who are going to visit people with property upstate, they'll get their license here and then be able to go up and hunt.
So this is not just for North Hempstead. This is the
New
York license.
Right. As I say, it's a state license. So you can use it anywhere where you're allowed to hunt in New York State. You just happen to get it from a place like my office or a town clerk somewhere else in the state. In some cases, you even get them from sporting goods stores and things like that.
Okay. You know, that's a very interesting thing because I just assume I don't hunt. I don't do any of that stuff. But if I was, I'm assuming you're going to go upstate, get your hotel room, and then have to get a license so that I can do that down here well in advance, which I thought it was just for, you know, North Hempstead situations.
No, anywhere in the state of New York. Yeah.
So, if you're going to do some fishing besides off the town dock with the boy or son, and you're going to go up trout fishing or whatever you might do somewhere, you could get the license for that in Manhasset.
Here in my office.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
You know, the important thing, too, I'm assuming, and I'm not even putting Wayne on the spot here, with these licenses comes the knowledge. I mean, I know people who go fishing, but you have to have a certain size fish. Otherwise, you got to throw it back. I'm sure you have to respect the rules. Mm-hmm. And, you know, environmentally, you know, you might be happy to take home that 3-inch thing, but it's a shame because you're hurting the environment. Throw it back, whether it takes another month or 6 years to grow. I don't know anything about that stuff. But bottom line, respect the rules. I mean, at the end of the day,
you want to be able to have it available for your kids, your grandchildren, and for future generations to be able to enjoy the same things that you're enjoying now.
I have two areas. I'm kind of into genealogy, family tree type stuff, and you do a lot of searching, you know. And you have two areas that I recorded here: records management and vital records. all of which, when you get into searching for past family stuff, do you have like in that area, would people be able to contact the town and get information?
Absolutely.
How would that work?
Genealogical searches all the time. We will frequently have people calling requesting ancient documents, or what they call them. You know, there are, for genealogical purposes, you don't necessarily get the official birth certificate or death certificate, but you can get copies of these documents that are for genealogical purposes only. It can't be used for identification because obviously many of the records we have, birth, death, and even marriage records, have a great degree of privacy to them. And there are all sorts of state regulations on who is entitled to what types of records. You know, if you come in and say, well, you know, my uncle died last month and I want a copy of his death certificate, you know, it's a shame, but you're not entitled to it. And sometimes you get people who say, well, wait a minute, I'm part of the family. I deserve to have this. And you try to remind people that it's to respect the privacy of the person who passed away and their immediate family members. You may be able to get a copy of a death certificate, but you're not going to get it from my office. You know, and that's how you try to remind people that, you know, you need to look at it from the other perspective as well, that there are privacy issues involved. You know, birth records are often the same way, but you can receive genealogical searches based upon certain names and based upon certain relationships, and they will be purposely marked as a genealogical record, as opposed to a vital record that you can then use as a form of identification. So, you know, we get them fairly frequently in the town. I would say at least once or twice a month, someone is requesting genealogical information. And if you go on the town website, you will see what qualifies as a genealogical issue as opposed to a straight form of ID. And it's usually the record has to be at least 75 years old. The person needs to have been passed away for at least so long. You know, there's a lot of regulations associated with it, but there is a lot of interest genealogically in finding out old records of the town. And that's from the vital side. Our records management, we have records that go back all the way to the 1600s for the actual creation of the town of North Hempstead. You know, we have what's called the Dongan Patent, which is the document that was issued creating the area known as Nassau County. Actually, it was even before it was Nassau County. We were part of New York City until 1898. So the town of Hempstead, the town of North Hempstead, all those boundaries are delineated in the Dongan Patent. And we actually have it in a historical quirk. You know, it's a document that the town of Hempstead would love to have. But because during the Revolutionary War, we were on the side of the Patriots and they were on the side of the Tories, the records ended up here at that moment because the town clerk at the time was a North Hempstead resident. So we have the document that actually established not only North Hempstead, but Hempstead and even parts of the city. So these are some of the records that we're able to access. Obviously, we're not going to lay out a 400-year-old document and have public viewing of it, but it is a document we can access. We can provide information about it, and there are a lot of documents just like that. Whether it's the truant officer records from the early 20th century, or the conscription records of Civil War soldiers in the 1860s. You know, those are all the types of records that we have in our records management office. And it really provides us a glimpse into what has taken place throughout the history of the town, not just in the last 7+ years that I've been the town clerk.
I have two questions. History. I'm sorry, two questions connected to that. A, are a lot of them digitized? And B, how do you preserve those kinds of things? How do you save them from fire or, right, you know, anything?
There are all sorts of standards that we have to have in place where, you know, we've developed a fire suppression system downstairs in our records management area. They are stored usually in climate controlled vaults. and in certain types of boxes with certain types of covering. There's a lot that goes into the preservation of those records. And it's nice to be able to know that we have those types of documents so that hundreds of years from now, people can still find out about the history of this town. So it really is a wonderful thing. What was the first part of your question? I apologize.
The digitizing. Are they?
Oh, the digitization. Some of them have been digitized, have been saved. We have a software program called Laserfiche, which actually more and more we're putting old documents and old records, whether it be town board minutes, even building department records in some cases are in Laserfiche, birth and death records. So many of the records of the town are actually scanned and digitized so that we have access to it without having to pull out the original document. Because obviously the more fingers, the more interaction you have with these documents, the more brittle and the more fragile they become. So the ability to be able to pull up a digital document and be able to see what was in the original document saves the original document from further degradation.
I had a personal experience. My great-great-grandfather, which this was back in Germany, I actually have a copy of a digitized document that shows he was wounded in the Franco-Prussian War.
Wow.
So this goes back into 1850 or whatever it was back
right,
then.
Right.
But somebody had the foresight to scan those kinds of documents.
Mm-hmm.
I would never get it. I'd never see it.
And
I often thought if he, I'm not a big proponent of war. And I thought, had he not just been wounded, but bumped off in that war, I wouldn't be on this Zoom call right now.
Exactly.
How many generations get cut short because of that kind of thing? It's all part of the history to me. Is interesting.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Otto is a huge history buff, but I also want to take a moment, because we're going to be coming into another break in a second or two here, to compliment Wayne, actually, because I know during your tenure as town clerk, you have dramatically increased the digitalization of records and really improved upon them, which is so important because as you're talking about it, stuff gets lost very easily or it gets ruined. It doesn't have to get lost. You can find the document, but if you can't read it because it got wet or something with a storm, it's a disaster.
One of the things we're doing right now, in fact, is we have a project that we're about to implement where we're going to take all the microfilm birth and death and marriage records, and we're going to digitize all of that so that you don't even have to access the microfilm anymore. We can just go into the computer and print out the documents without even having to pull out the microfilm and hope it hasn't fallen apart and
that breaks too.
Vinegar and
You know what? We got to take another break. It's going so quick. But the quicker the breaks come, that means we're having fun. You're
listening to
Continue Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.